Eagles Entertainment.
With the 10th pick in the NFL draft, the Philadelphia Eagles select.
You're listening to the Journey to the Draft podcast.
Welcome to the Journey to the Draft podcast. I'm your host, Fran Duffy, and we continue our divisional recaps with our final episode of our divisional recaps of the 2023 NFL Draft. We're going to start things off with Draft Buzz, where Ben Fennell and I, we're going to get into the AFC and NFC North. So we're going to cover all four teams in the NFC North, then three of the four teams in the AFC side to wrap up our 2023 NFL Draft recaps. We're also going to catch up with Alex Cazora with the Blueprint. We're going to cover the Pittsburgh Steelers there, everything that Omar Khan, the general manager, did in his first year running the draft for the Pittsburgh Steelers out in the western part of the state. Really appreciate the time from Alex here this week on the podcast. As always, make sure you head on over to Apple Podcasts, leave us a rating, leave us a review. If you've got a question, leave it there in the comment box. We'll answer it here in an upcoming episode. We're not that far away from turning our attention to 2024, so make sure you stay subscribed right here on the Journey to the Draft podcast. That said, let's get into Draft Buzz. It's time to catch up with Ben Fennell.
Now it's time for Draft Buzz.
All right, now time for Draft Buzz. I welcome in Ben Fennell here to talk through the teams in the NFC and AFC North. We're going to do seven of those eight teams. Again, we're going to wait for the Pittsburgh Steelers until our blueprint segment. Let's start in the NFC, where, Ben, we are going to go with a team that surprised a lot of people in the first round of this draft. And that is the Detroit Lions, their general manager, Brad Holmes, their head coach, Dan Campbell. They make two first-round picks. After a trade back from number six overall, they get running back Jahmyr Gibbs, the running back from Alabama, and then Iowa linebacker Jack Campbell. Ben, in your mind, you could pick one, both, either one, doesn't matter to me. Why were they the picks when you look at Gibbs and you look at Campbell?
Well, I think adding more offensive firepower to Ben Johnson's unit, you know, is kind of the offseason goal here. You know, I think they have a really good establishment with the O-line, trying to figure out the backfield, bringing in David Montgomery. So you kind of knew that the relationship with Swift and the Lions was kind of fracturing, was, you know, kind of riding its course at the end there. So finding a dual threat weapon to add to the offense, like a Jahmyr Gibbs, was a priority this offseason. I think it's important to call him a weapon, not just a running back. This is a guy that's going to be flexed out into the slot, split out wide, certainly doing a lot of his work out of the backfield. But this guy is an offensive weapon that they drafted with the 12th overall pick. So don't put so much of a positional label on Jahmyr Gibbs, because he is a special, special player, not only as a route runner with the ball in his hands. I think he's going to be a really exciting addition to this offense that is pretty well built in the trenches and has some presence on the outside in Jameson Williams and Amon-Ra St. Brown. And, you know, bringing in a David Montgomery, you have that physical back. I think adding a Jahmyr Gibbs fits perfectly into that kind of a eclectic mold of playmakers for the offense.
Take us a rewind. It was just over a month ago as we're recording this when the pick happened. You're in the truck at the draft in Kansas City. Were you shocked that Gibbs went as high as he did? Because he wasn't really being talked about as going that high in the first round. It was more like, oh, like in the back end, late 20s, in the 30s, maybe into round two even. Were you shocked that he went in the top 15?
You know, I think once the Lions traded out of the top 10, I think anything was in play for that team. But it was certainly a team you couldn't particularly figure out what they were looking for, what the landing spot was. A lot of people had projected corner early on if they had sit there in the middle of the top 10. But, you know, trading back, I think it was kind of an open season. So we were a little bit surprised, especially at the time, them sitting with DeAndre Swift and David Montgomery in the backfield. You had Jahmyr Gibbs, suddenly feels very crowded and a little unnecessary. But you let obviously the dust settle with the roster and Swift situation. Now, suddenly, Montgomery, Gibbs are a great kind of thunder and lightning combination, and it makes sense the further remove we get from it.
All right, well, let's go through the rest of these picks here. So they hit Gibbs and Campbell in round one. They draft in the second round Sam Laporta, the tight end from Iowa, Brian Branch, the safety from Alabama, and then Tennessee quarterback Hendon Hooker there, as well as Broderick Martin, the defensive tackle from Western Kentucky. I believe the first non-combine invite selected in the draft. And then you go into day three, a couple selections there. Colby Sarsdale, the tackle from William & Mary, and Antoine Green, the wide receiver from North Carolina. So biggest surprise, I think a lot of people would be surprised by Gibbs going as high. Jack Campbell, who he's a guy that you and I both loved. It really depends at the end of the day. Like, what do you think Campbell's ceiling is? If he was worthy of the, what was it, 20 overall to Detroit? I loved Jack Campbell. So to me, like, I'm looking at that like, yeah, like I think that's a great pick by the Lions. But what was the biggest surprise for you when you look at it?
I mean, throw a dart at their draft board and there's a conversation from Gibbs, 12th overall. I mean, Sam Laporta going over Michael Mayer.
Yes, that was
a big conversation, which is obviously one we were kind of alluding to as the process led up to the draft there, that they really weren't that far apart as prospects. And then Jack Campbell, not only the linebacker going in round one, but the Lions taking a linebacker in round one, which they brought back Alex Anzalone, and they had the darling Malcolm Rodriguez, kind of felt settled at Mike and Will linebacker. So adding a Jack Campbell to that mix, it's a little bit of guessing as far as where he projects, you know, moving forward and who the odd man out is. But this is a team that is okay with drafting a year away or drafting for the future. As we saw last year, they traded up for an injured Jameson Williams. And now they're sitting here laughing that they have this offensive firepower. I know Jameson's dealing with the suspension and things like that, but I think planning for the future is something that Brad Holmes and this team are more than okay to doing. So a lot of these players don't look right at week one and say, where am I playing Campbell? Where does Gibbs fit in? You know, where does Laporta play? I think this team takes a very long view approach, and it's really refreshing to see.
For me, I would say the biggest surprise was Brian Branch falling to where he did, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's another great one.
The fact he went 45, like, man, that is wild. And I get it. Like, he's a smaller safety. He didn't test out of this world, right? So,
and Fran, this is a team that spent money on the secondary. They just brought in Emmanuel Mosley and CJ Gardner-Johnson and Cameron Sutton. And then all of a sudden, they're sitting there at the board and saying, oh, Brian Branch is available. Should we take him? Sure. Where does Brian Branch play this year? Same thing we were just talking about. I have no idea, but I just love the long view approach of this whole roster.
Yeah, I was shocked that Branch fell as far as he did, to be honest. He was a guy that we would talk about as a top 10 or top 15 football player in this class. And again, I get the vibes of taking a smaller safety who didn't test well. I just think like 3 years from now, we're going to be like, man, like how did Branch, what a steal for the Detroit Lions. A day three early impact player. I went through the two guys. Antoine Green, especially with the Jameson Williams suspension, I wonder if there's a pathway to him making this team, Ben. Just obviously, he will need to go and have a good camp as a late day three selection, but he's a speedster out of North Carolina. He's a speed merchant. That's what he was throughout the majority of his career. He was a low volume, high impact player used down the field. And we were watching him as a sophomore down there in Chapel Hill. I'll be interested to see if he's able to make this roster. Tell me you watched the William & Mary tackle and I will call you a stone-faced liar.
I don't believe I did, but
yeah,
Antoine
I
remember Antoine Green taking a backseat to like Daz Newsome and Deami Brown, and they were just throwing shots left and right. And all of a sudden, Green was like, where are my targets? And Sam Howell, you know, finally threw it to him late in his career there. But even if Jameson Williams was fully ready to go and didn't have the question marks, I see four receivers set to make the roster, and Amon-Ra, Marvin Jones, who they brought back, Josh Reynolds, and Jameson. I don't see any reason why Antoine Green can't beat out a Khalif Raymond or a Trinity Benson or one of those fifth or sixth receivers in the pecking order. This guy's going to play special teams. He blocks his butt off. He's a great vertical threat. He's mature. I really think he's going to make this team and contribute one way or the other, no matter what Jameson's status is. I think he has a track background too. Yep. So this kid can run. Yep.
He can roll. No question about it. Let's move on to our next team here as we now take a look at the Chicago Bears, a team that previously had the number one pick. They trade down in March and end up with the number nine pick. Then they trade down again with the Philadelphia Eagles. The Eagles move up. They take Jalen Carter. The Bears sit there and they take right tackle Darnell Wright from the University of Tennessee. Ben, what were your thoughts there on Darnell Wright ending up at Chicago? Why was he the pick?
Well, certainly, you know, securing the offensive line in front of Justin Fields is a major priority. And that right tackle spot didn't really have a whole lot of talent, competition, you know, incumbent starter. They need to find someone. So I'm glad they were able to trade out of one and still get, which I'm sure they're stepping up to the podium saying, the best tackle in this draft, which I think Darnell Wright is certainly in that conversation. I think the Cardinals and Paris Johnson may have a little bit of a challenge to that, but I think he fits Chicago. I think he's going to just fit that mean, nasty demeanor that Ryan Pace and that whole organization want to, you know, kind of embody. And this guy played outside at Tennessee, played in some slop games. I just think he fits into that Midwestern style. And believe me, the Chicago Bears, they're not going to be running the up-tempo air raid. They're not going to be running 100 plays a game. I think Darnell Wright is going to be a better pro than he ever was on Saturdays because of the style that's going to fit his type of game. Slow things down, let him be a mauler. He is ready to plug and play at right tackle today. The Bears got a good one.
To me, one big thing that they like to talk about, you know, just going back and watching those press conferences, was his ability to recover, his balance. You know, a lot of things we talk about a tackle's feet and a tackle's strength and power and things like that. They talked about just his ability. Yeah, like even if a guy gets into his chest and he gets him one step back into the backfield, his ability to kind of reset that anchor, his ability to recover. He's never on the ground. That was a recurring theme when listening to them talk about Darnell Wright in that front office. The biggest surprise going through the rest of these picks here, when you look at Chicago, let me just buzz through the picks really quick here. They didn't have their own second round pick after trading for Chase Claypool from the Pittsburgh Steelers, but they still had three day two selections. They select Florida defensive tackle Jervon Dexter, a guy that I was a big fan of in the process. Tyreek Stevenson, the corner from Miami. Zach Pickens, the defensive tackle from South Carolina. So three out of the four picks there from the SEC for the Chicago Bears. And then a handful of selections here on day three. I'll buzz through them real quick. Texas running back Rashawn Johnson, Cincinnati speed receiver Tyler Scott, Oregon linebacker Noah Sewell, Minnesota corner Terrell Smith, Kennesaw State defensive lineman Travis Bell, Stanford safety Kendall Williamson. So I'll go back to that initial question there, Ben. Biggest surprise when you look at this draft?
I think the double dipping on day two at defensive tackle. And it's funny, they took both Dexter and Pickens. And I talked to an area scout, I think 2 or 3 weeks before the draft, just gets a landscape on some positions, particularly defensive tackle. He felt there was a little bit of a drop off after Benton, and that's kind of the way things played out. Both Pickens and Dexter, by this area scout, were called lottery picks. And these were lottery ticket picks, in that these guys have all the tools, all the ability, all the size, all the athleticism to be not only NFL players, but stars in the NFL. Now, obviously, they played inconsistent on Saturdays and had some dysfunction with their scheme and their supporting cast. But I think you would be in full agreement, Fran. Dexter, Pickens, they're playing the SEC. They both have flashed first-round ability. They have flashed that real impact ability. They just didn't do it consistently. And I can absolutely see why they would want to take picks on these guys on day two. And believe me, they're hoping just one of them cashes in, because there is a path to both them starting this year. There isn't a whole lot of depth or competition in front of them. They need to get better against the run, particularly down the middle. They improved the linebackers with TJ Edwards, Tremaine Edmonds, the D tackles. There's a lot of pressure on them. I could see Dexter and Pickens both playing a lot this year, but they're just hoping one of those guys can turn into a star for them.
Yeah, it was a little high for me for Pickens. I wasn't big on him, but I really loved the first two selections there on day two. I love Dexter where they got him. I really like Tyreek Stevenson as well. Some people kind of bristled at them taking a corner as high after they took a couple DBs high in last year's draft, but I think they really would have liked to get Kyler Gordon full-time into the slot, and I think that might be something we see here from Chicago.
You know, Fran, I would bristle for certain schemes, but you know Eberflus is going to play a lot of cover two. He's going to play a lot of cloud corners. I think Tyreek Stevenson is one of the best cover two corners in the class. So if they had taken him even earlier, Eberflus's scheme, it made a lot of sense. Now, if you're playing a lot of cover one and press man, yeah, maybe not. But I just think he fits the Bears and what they want to do.
All right, well, let's get to the next question here. The day three early impact. For me, looking at Tyler Scott, like, there's plenty of opportunity for him to carve out a role here in this receiving core. Obviously, he's got a skill set that similar to Darnell Mooney, who I believe is entering a contract year anyway. But Tyler Scott, where they got him in the middle of day three, I think that was great value. It's going to be a nice pickup, I think, for the Chicago Bears.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. And I was a little surprised to see him fall to round four. And his teammate getting drafted above him, I think Trey Tucker went earlier than...
Trey Tucker went to the Raiders in round three. That was surprising that Tucker went ahead of Scott.
Yeah, but Tyler Scott was a guy a lot of people had comps to Darnell Mooney. So that's a nice fit there. And certainly a guy I can see getting on the field, and not just being on the field, contributing early and often.
Yeah, Roshan Johnson, the running back from Texas, they took before Tyler Scott, and I think he can come in, and it wouldn't shock me if he ended up with a nice little role in that backfield as well. They lose David Montgomery. They made some additions there as well in that backfield.
Yeah, they go and get Foreman,
From Carolina, but it would not shock me at all if Roshan Johnson ended up with a bigger share of carries than people think. One big picture thought, I don't know if you had anything there for Chicago, but they consistently kind of hammered home that this is a trait-based operation. Character does matter, but they kept hammering home big, long, fast. That's something that they definitely want to continue to add top end talent into that organization, just trying to find as many blue chip players as possible. I don't know if you had any thoughts overall, just kind of looking at that class from the Chicago Bears.
No, I'm right there with you. And even looking at some of those like later picks, the Noah Sewells of the world, and the way Dexter came out of high school and his height, weight, speed, and his basketball background, even Tyreek Stevenson being a five-star former Georgia and back. You know, these guys have had some dysfunction and inconsistency in their college career. Like you said, high-level players, high-level traits, good players to take bets on.
Well, let's go to the Green Bay Packers, a team that you know, I know you're always watching pretty closely here. Their top choice after trading up with the Jets in the Aaron Rodgers deal, they take Iowa defensive lineman Lucas Van Ness. Why did Van Ness end up staying in the Midwest?
Well, certainly positional value is really important to this Packers team. Gutekunst and LaFleur, they're almost always going to go after the trenches in round one, whether O-line, edge rusher, corner, one of those premier positions. So you kind of knew where they were going. And don't forget, we had to replace Jerron Reed up front, replace Dean Lowry up front, some guys that are getting a little bit older on the back end, you know, like Preston Smith and some players like that. So there is a need to retool the defensive line and get more impact players. So there's snaps to be had. I think finding a young, exciting, inside, outside, versatile player like Van Ness was important to this team. And for all intents for him, he just fits that Packer style. You know, Iowa, you know, he's really tough. He wants to go right through you. You want to call him that corn-fed type of guy. He just fits like a Packers pick. You know, maybe not the Brian Bulaga Iowa, but certainly an Iowa on the defensive side will fit right in as well.
He definitely felt like a Packers pick. That defense, they've got, what is that? I mean, they got to be close to double-digit first-round picks on that side of the ball now, right?
In terms of who's playing
in that two deep, I would think there's going to be pretty high expectations on that unit.
Yeah, absolutely. And don't forget, you know, Devontae Wyatt didn't play a lot as a rookie last year. He was a first round pick. A lot of the attention on Quay Walker, the other first round pick. Yep. They're going to need both those sophomores to take huge leaps in combination with a guy like Van Ness coming and performing right away, which you draft a guy in the top 15. There's a expectation for him to have an impact. So a lot of pressure on this Packers defense that kept Joe Barry despite all that talent from last year. And payday is coming up for Rashawn Gary, too. So this team has a lot going on as far as their transition. We're all talking about Jordan Love and the offense. Don't forget about this defense. There's a lot to talk about.
Rashawn Gary, Jair Alexander, Darnell Savage, a first-round pick, Kenny Clark, a first-round pick. A lot of blue-chip talent there on that side of the ball. When you look at the Packers haul overall, I want to ask you about the biggest surprise. But real quick for our listeners, I'll just roll through their picks here in this draft. They take Van Ness in the first round. They come back with three day-two selections. Luke Musgrave, the tight end from Oregon State. Jaden Reed, the senior receiver from Michigan State. And then another tight end there in Tucker Kraft, the tight end from South Dakota State. So three states schools getting some love there from Green Bay on day two. And then on day three, we got a handful of picks here. Colby Wooden, the defensive lineman from Auburn, a very versatile player. Sean Clifford, the quarterback from Penn State. Dontavian Wicks, wide receiver from Virginia. Carl Brooks, the defensive tackle from Bowling Green. Anders Carlson, the kicker from Auburn. Carrington Valentine, a corner who declared early for the draft from Kentucky. Lou Nichols, the running back from Central Michigan. Anthony Johnson, a decorated player, a safety from Iowa State. And then the final one, Grant Dubose, the wide receiver from Charlotte. So laying out all of those picks there, Ben, we're talking about close to double-digit selections here for the Packers in this draft. Biggest surprise when you look at the haul overall?
Well, it wasn't a surprise with a double dip on tight ends. I think there was a clear need and intent to address that position, not bringing back Mercedes Lewis, letting Tonyan go to Chicago in free agency. That Y and U tight end in LaFleur's offense, very important. So not so much a surprise. I think they did get put on high alert when Sam Laporta went before Michael Mayer and there was that early run. They knew they had to go get guys. But the biggest surprise to me was seeing Jaden Reed go 50th overall.
Yeah,
a guy I had a huge crush on. But I didn't see a lot of pecking orders that had him go over Jalen Hyatt, the Biletnikoff winner, over Josh Downs, who was an exciting gadget player. Even guys like Marvin Mims and Tank Dell got a little bit more steam late in the process. I love Jaden Reed. I had him as a day two player. I just did not see him going 50th overall, but I'm excited he ended up being a Packer, and I expect him to be an impact player right away.
So what's your sense on why he was the pick over those other guys?
I just think he fits the Packers style of wanting a three-level threat from the Big Ten. He's played outdoors. He has a toughness to him. He's a competitive player. He tested really well. He showed up at the Senior Bowl, was really competitive in nearly every facet down there. I just think he was a emerging, more complete player than some of those other guys I had listed from the Hyatts, the Dells, the Mims, the Downs, which we all know kind of their highs and lows and their traits and what their issues are. And just think once you started looking at the landscape receiver, he was a safer pick in there. And not only safer, was more exciting and had a lot more impact potential, in my opinion. So he was a guy that kind of flirted just a little under the radar in that next wave of receivers, not knowing where he stood with the you know, Rashid Rice's of the world and, you know, that next kind of tier. But 50th overall was right on the money on my board. And I had him as a fringe 50, top 50 player through most of the process. So I just wasn't sure if a team was going to pull the trigger that early.
Yeah, they talked a lot. They do this consistently whenever they talk about receiver with this profile, but receivers with return ability, that's been like a, going back to like when Ron Wolf was there. Yeah. That's something that they always kind of, you know, give a little bit of a bump to just because of what that player can do, not special teams wise, but yards after catch wise. It's like, yeah, this is a guy that has the ability to be a playmaker if he's got that kick return and more notably the punt return experience. And that's something Jaden Reed has done at a high level throughout his career, both at Michigan State and also at Western Michigan earlier in his career. I guess double dipping at tight end on day two. They took Musgrave and then they came back and took Kraft. They said basically like they had a really high grade on Kraft. And so they came in and they've lost a bunch of guys in free agency. Mercedes Lewis, I believe, still unsigned. They lose Tanya into Chicago. So clearly some holes there at, in that position room, but it'll be interesting to see how all of those guys kind of fit in together. It wouldn't shock me if Kraft ended up making more of an impact early on as opposed to Musgrave.
Yeah, I think Kraft's going to fill into that Mercedes Lewis role, have his hand in the turf a little bit more, block a little bit more. He's closer to that 260-pound wide tight end. I think Musgrave has that seam stretch ability, that vertical element, the pass game element that's going to fill into that Robert Tonyan role. So neither of them are a pure one-for-one replacing those incumbent guys, but just trying to figure out where they kind of line. But don't forget, Musgrave, obviously from that Oregon State offense, he blocked a lot as well.
He did go through day three early impact players. For me, I'm going to go with that first one on day three, Colby Wooden.
Yep.
Ben, I swear I said this to you in like February or January. It was the time when I had just gotten done rewatching Colby Wooden because I watched him in the summer off of his redshirt sophomore tape and then watched him again as a redshirt junior. And, you know, again, it was like post Senior Bowl, pre combine. I was like, Colby Wooden just kind of like feels like a Packers defensive lineman. They've drafted guys like, you know, the Montrevious Adams of the world. Obviously, he was another guy from Auburn, but like he had that same kind of like versatile skill set. And I was like, yeah, he just feels like a guy that would be a good fit there in Green Bay. And lo and behold, he ends up there with the Packers.
He was a guy that flashed as a true freshman at Auburn. I was like, whoa, this guy's going to be a first-round pick. I think I was watching Zakobi McLean or somebody, Smoke Monday, somebody behind him, and just kept looking at number 25. But then the next year, he'd be a stand-up outside linebacker. And then the next year, he's like a one-tech. And in any game, you could find him playing up and down the line, very much like Carl Brooks, who they took, you know, out of Bowling Green, who a lot of people wanted to go to the combine, kind of an awkward 300-pound defensive end that can play up and down the line. Both those guys, I think, can have some early impact. But my vote, Anthony Johnson Jr., Iowa State. I think this guy is going to eventually be a starter. Could be day one, week one, taking over that Adrian Amos role. This kid's tough. Excellent top-down instincts in that cover four kind of quarter scheme where you're playing the run first. Good play ID, good tackling, really, really tough. Then he played corner early on, so he has some instincts with the ball in the air. But this kid is fearless, and I don't think people are realizing – the turnover at safety with this Packers team. I think Savage is eventually on his way out, despite them picking up the fifth-year option. Like I had mentioned, Adrian Amos, not back with the team this year. Rudy Ford, they did bring back. There's some snaps to be had and some dust to kind of settle on the back end. So I can absolutely see Anthony Johnson Jr. taking that spot very early in his Packers career.
Johnson Jr. has a very similar kind of profile, or different players, but similar kind of profile to Reed Blankenship. And then he's like a 4 or 5 year starter, posted a ton of production. He's played a ton of football for Iowa State. Let's now get to our next category here with the Green Bay Packers. Just big picture. Any other takeaways from looking at this draft haul, Ben?
No, I think, you know, they took a lot of players in their neck of the woods, as I like to say. They took the South Dakota State tight end. They took the receiver from Michigan State, the safety from Iowa State, the D lineman from Iowa. A lot of their early draft capital was those Midwest type of players, which I think is important. You know, you want guys that are comfortable in the cold, comfortable outdoors. You know, they're going to get weather up in Green Bay and Chicago. Yeah, enjoy the comfortable domes in Minnesota and Detroit. But Midwest guys are important to those types of clubs. And I always go back to teams like the Steelers and Mike Tomlin telling us the story of deciding between Eddie Lacy and Le'Veon Bell. And Eddie Lacy had never played a game under 60 degrees, never played a game above the Mason-Dixon line. Le'Veon was a slopper and a mutter out there in Michigan State. So that type of stuff matters. And I think the Packers took a lot of Packers types of picks, in my opinion, this draft.
Let's go now to one of the Packers' biggest rivals here in the Minnesota Vikings. They didn't pick until a little bit later in the first round, obviously making the playoffs there for Minnesota. But top choice, wide receiver Jordan Addison. And he was one of the more mocked players to the Minnesota Vikings throughout the process. It was right in the middle of that wide receiver run there in the 20s, Ben. And they end up with the former Biletnikoff winner there in Addison. Why do you think he was the pick there by Kevin O'Connell and the Minnesota Vikings?
Yeah, I think the Vikings were one of the more exciting teams to try to project, and they had a bit of an identity crisis through the media and not knowing where they were going with their top pick. Are they going quarterback and looking, you know, to the Kirk Cousins of the future? Are they finally going to get cornerback right on the other side of the ball? Oh, yeah, Adam Thielen's gone. It'd be great to get a running mate with Justin Jefferson, make one last run on the backside of Kirk Cousins' deal. I had no idea where this team is going, but Jordan Addison absolutely fits what they needed to complement Justin Jefferson, to replace that Adam Thielen role, to give Kirk Cousins a weapon, I think, on three levels of the defense, because Addison's a guy that can separate underneath, and he knows how to work double moves and win down the field as well. One of the more prolific deep ball receivers I've ever studied coming out of Saturday. So he might not get every pass over the top, but he's going to be able to stretch the defense, stretch the field, keep safeties back, make everybody's life easier, particularly Justin Jefferson.
Yeah, and I think that's the, you know, that's something that they talked about in the post-draft press conference, listening to both Kevin O'Connell, the head coach, and then Kwesi Adofo-Mensah, actually one of my favorite general managers to listen to in a press conference, who's now in his second year there in Minneapolis.
Very well spoken.
Yep. I really enjoy listening to him. One thing they talked about a lot with Addison and all the receivers they said that they brought in was that, look, you know, Jefferson's going to get a lot of attention. We really wanted to put a priority on finding guys that can win one-on-one. And that was one of the things about having Adam Thielen. He was such a technician, his ability to win in the route, like that was a beneficial part of him being in the offense. He's obviously gotten older. He leaves in free agency, goes to the Carolina Panthers. So finding somebody that could line up opposite Jefferson alongside TJ Hockenson that could win one-on-one, just do that. Literally just go beat your one-on-one. And that's something they get here in Addison. I would say one of the sharper route runners from these blue chip receivers at the top of the draft. And they get a guy that comes in and fits that role early. I think that made a lot of sense.
And that was the end of the receiver run, yep, for lack of better words, where four in a row went in the middle of round one. Do you think the Vikings panicked a little bit when they saw Smith and Jigba, then Quentin Johnson, then Zay Flowers? Shoot, we better go get our receiver now. Do you think Addison was a consolation prize, or do you think they walked away with the guy that fits them the best?
Whew. From what I had heard pre-draft was that Addison was a guy that they were in on, as opposed to like a Quentin Johnson or a Zay Flowers. But, you know, I think that when you look at some of the other stuff that you were hearing about Minnesota, or we'll say like mid-April rather, was that they were talking about them making a move up for a quarterback. That went out the window, right? Yeah. And so like there were a lot of other things that had been talked about them. Some people talked a lot about them with corner. They chose to wait there, and we're going to get to that here in a second. But I think when you add in a guy like Addison, I don't think that they viewed that as a consolation prize. I think that was a guy that they definitely had earmarked as a possible selection for them.
Yeah, just fun to kind of analyze it in reverse there and to see, oh, they wanted receiver. Is that the receiver they wanted, or do they have to end up with Addison? I think ends up being the perfect complement to that team.
Yeah, and that'll certainly be one. I think when you look at these wide receivers as rookies, those four guys right in a row, honestly, man, it wouldn't shock me if Addison's the most productive of that foursome there in year one, when it's all said and done, not over the course of their career. But when you talk about like role and the early impact potential, I think that Addison has a nice little pathway there to some early numbers. Let's go to the rest of these picks here. They did not have a second rounder in Minnesota after the TJ Hockenson trade with Detroit last fall. So Mekhi Blackman, the corner from USC, they get him in round three. And then just four picks there on day three in the draft. They take a couple of LSU Tigers, Jay Ward, the safety from LSU, defensive back, played corner, played nickel, and played safety. Jaquelin Roy, the defensive tackle from LSU. By the way, they talked afterwards about Durante Jones, the assistant there with Minnesota, was a defensive coach with LSU previously, so very close connections there with both of the LSU players. They get BYU quarterback Jaren Hall very late in the draft, and then Dwayne McBride, the running back from UAB, in the final round as well. So, Ben, biggest surprise when you look at the Vikings draft class?
I think, you know, in a vacuum, just seeing Mekhi Blackman go that early.
Me too.
I liked him as a day three option. I thought, you know, a little undersized, but speedy, competitive, probably transition to nickel. And looking at the roster, the Vikings just didn't seem to fit their style of corner. You know, they have some big guys out there, and Akil Evans they took last year out of Missouri. They brought in Jawan Williams from New England, who we all know is 210 pounds and 6'2". Yep. Andrew Booth is obviously getting back there in his second year. They have guys like Tay Gowan. Just didn't feel like Mekhi Blackmon was the Vikings style of defensive back, but he's a really feisty kid. And the only thing I have negative on Blackmon, just his size, you know, barely 180 pounds, got beasted a lot in the red zone and some one-on-one situations. But he's a guy I know a lot of NFL scouts were very high on. He tested really well, and his best days might be ahead of him. And he'll have to compete with Byron Murphy that they brought in to play that nickel, and Jay Ward that they took a round later, who is a great nickel as well from LSU. So a bit of a puzzling kind of pieces to put together in the DBs and of Minnesota. Don't forget Lewis Cine. You know, who blew up his ankle last year, first round pick. I don't entirely know how this defensive back room is going to fall, you know, into place for week one, but there's some interesting talent all over it.
Well, you made a point I was going to make a little bit later about like big picture takeaways, in that this is a team that lack of size is not going to be a turnoff point for Minnesota. You know, Jordan Addison, very, very light. Mekhi Blackmon, you mentioned, very, very light. Jay Ward, he's on the leaner side. Jaren Hall, an undersized quarterback. So a bunch of guys they took just in this class that would be described as undersized by their position metrics.
I mean, I think they're going to try to roll up Brian Asamoah as their Mike linebacker, you know, for next year, who's, you know, 225 pounds. So some interesting, you know, roster fill outs there.
Yeah, day three early impact. You mentioned Jay Ward. That was a guy that I felt like he could play the most snaps from those day three picks.
Yeah, Fran, give me Jacklin Roy. This guy is going to take over that Dalvin Tomlinson one tech role. I don't know if he's got a lot of juice to get after the passer, but Jacklin Roy played some good football at LSU, and seeing, you know, Harrison Phillips in front of him, Kyrus Tonga in front of him, not a whole lot of competition and maybe getting a starting spot at defensive tackle. So Jacklin Roy, I think he's going to get some good snaps this year.
One big picture takeaway. Actually, I got two big picture takeaways that I want to throw in there outside of the size thing. One thing that came up a lot was versatility, guys that can do a lot of different things inside, outside, you know, regardless of what position the guys played. And that was something that they hit on a lot last year as well after the draft. And so it definitely feels like versatility is important to Adofa Mensah and to Kevin O'Connell. And also they mentioned for Brian Flores as well, the versatility on that side of the ball. And then also a number of times, Ben, and this is interesting, Kevin O'Connell talked a lot about this, and Kwesi Adofa Mensah mentioned this when it came to Jordan Addison, and said this is something that Kevin O'Connell kept saying over and over, was that they liked natural players, guys with an it factor, like they kind of like that hidden element that like is hard, it's not easy to quantify. Like they talked about that a lot. I just thought that was kind of interesting. You know, especially I think people kind of look at Adofa Mensah coming from, you know, with his background previously with Cleveland, San Francisco, and saying like, oh, well, you know, everything's like analytically focused. Honestly, man, like when I look at these two drafts for the last 2 years, I don't think this is like a team that at least operates from the draft from like an analytically forward headspace. Like, I don't think that that's the way that they look at this.
Yeah, it's a really interesting roster to look at. And heading into 2023, this is probably one of the more sturdy rosters from the previous season as far as the turnover. You had mentioned not a lot of draft picks. They didn't have a second round pick, had to go right to that third round pick in Blackmon, and kind of a changing at the guard with Eric Kendricks at linebacker. But a lot of this team is the same. The O-line's the same. The backfield's the same. You know, replacing Addison in for Thielen. I think a lot of people want to know what this team's intent was to compete in their long-term view. I don't know if they have a long-term view, Fran. So a lot of those analytics-driven picks are kind of long-term approaches, and agreed with you. I don't know if I see that throughout the roster. And they're an exciting team because I don't entirely know what their intent and their self-scouting views are on their team. And they might not even know either. So this Vikings team, you know, is going to compete. Do they have enough juice to finally get over the hill? I think it's a big question.
All right. So we've now done all of the NFC teams from the draft, Ben. We're almost there. We could see the top of the mountain here. Let's go now to the AFC North. Baltimore Ravens. A lot of news surrounding Baltimore leading up to the draft, all offseason, and on draft day, Lamar Jackson. The coverage for the Ravens leading into the draft was tough. So much of the reporting around them had to do with the quarterback and his contract. So I would say, though, that one player that got connected to them often was Zay Flowers, and he ends up being the pick there, the wide receiver from Boston College. The whispers through the grapevine were that Baltimore really, really liked Zay Flowers throughout the process, kind of got that the wind of that over the course of like February, March, and then into April, and he ends up in Baltimore. Why do you think that they had their eyes set on Zay Flowers?
Well, adding more creative weapons, you know, around Lamar and diversifying the offense was certainly a priority, and particularly that receiver room. I think we all knew Rashad Bateman was going to be back, former first-round pick 2 years ago, but adding Odell Beckham and Zay Flowers and Nelson Aguilar, need to get more dangerous, more threatening at the receiver spot. And not only getting those guys, Fran, you got to use them. So So I think it's going to take, you know, not only the grocery shopping, but the chefs to make the meal and then, you know, start plating. And I think you're still going to have that run game, Lamar Jackson element, the big offensive line, the power run game, the read option stuff with more threats on the outside and more easy options for Lamar, like just getting the ball in Zay Flowers' hands, whether that's screens or end arounds or quick game, but he can also win down the field. Now having receivers that opponents need to consider, safeties need to identify pre-snap, just is going to make Lamar's life a little bit easier. An easy offense is the name of the game across the NFL. Find ways, multiple ways to attack your opponent. And the Ravens just got a little bit one-dimensional with how they were attacking. So I think adding some threats to the receiver room, starting with Zay Flowers, is part of their offseason goal, and they've certainly hit that.
The philosophical change there is going to be fascinating to watch and just like how it's executed here this year. And you know, a ton of respect for Lamar Jackson and for Todd Monken and you Odell Beckham Jr. And you get Rashad Bateman, a player you and I both loved. He's coming back from the list, Frank. You add in Zay Flowers. You've got all of these pieces. Mark Andrews still there. It's going to be fascinating to see how this all comes together. But it really looks like it's gearing up to a big philosophical shift.
And we need some clarity on Lamar. There's a bit of a chicken and the egg argument with Greg Roman and Lamar Jackson in using receivers. Are they not using them because he wasn't efficient at them, or were they not using them because Greg Roman and Lamar didn't believe in that? So there was a lot of conversation about their offensive design and philosophies. Well, it's a new start with Todd Monken. And I think with these receiving threats, the writing's on the wall for them to make this work and to show that, hey, we can push the ball down the field. We can push the ball outside the numbers. We can get receivers involved. And the excuses are kind of drying up here. So I'm excited for a new chapter of Lamar Jackson and this Ravens offense.
No doubt. It's like I said, it's going to be one of the more interesting things to follow here early on in this 2023 NFL season. Let's look at the rest of these picks here for the Baltimore Ravens. You get linebacker Trenton Simpson out of Clemson. He's the only day two selection there for the Ravens. They traded their second round pick for Roquan Smith. So they take Simpson in round three after getting Roquan there in round two. Four day three selections here. Tavius Robinson, a defensive end from Ole Miss. Caillou Blue Kelly, the corner from Stanford there on day three. Sala Almave Laulu from Oregon, the oversized offensive tackle. And then Andrew Voorhees, the guard from USC, who actually tore his ACL at the combine. So he fell to the final round of the draft due to that injury. But Ben, biggest surprise when you look at the Baltimore Ravens draft class?
Yeah, it's probably the pecking order of the way linebackers fell. You know, I think for a long time, we saw Trenton Simpson maybe in the top 15 through some of the process, a lot of round one love. I think we started to give the positional value its course and moved him to day two, but nobody expected him falling to 86th overall and seeing a guy like Jack Campbell go nearly 70 spots ahead of Trenton Simpson. So I think just the linebacking pecking order and the positional value of linebacking moving forward is fun to kind of diagnose. And is Jack Campbell the outlier? Is what Brad Holmes did the outlier? Or is, you know, where Trenton Simpson fell really the more appropriate spot of the draft for off-ball linebackers. So it's fun to dissect kind of in the rear view.
Yeah, that was a surprise for me, him falling all the way down to 86 overall. I was also surprised they didn't take a corner earlier in the draft. They had been sniffing around a lot of the top corners on the market from the pro side of things during the offseason. So it shocked me that they did not go that direction early in this draft. That said, my pick for the early day three impact was the corner that they got in the third day, and that was Caillou Blue Kelly, the kid from Stanford. You and I both liked him. My kind of corner, just like instinctive, tough, didn't have like the most scheme versatility in my opinion, but you're looking for like an outside corner that's got instincts. He's got some ball skills. Like I like Caillou Blue Kelly.
Yeah, and they love their dime personnel. So I could see him maybe having a role on the inside, which he did some safety nickel stuff, you know, at times at Stanford, but I don't see if there's any reason why he can't go compete with Rockyasin, Jalen Armour Davis, and say, let's see who the best man is at that spot opposite Marlon Humphrey. So I think he can compete to be a starter right away, but if not, just be a sub-package player and a special teamer, which I think he's more than capable of doing. He has tons of athleticism. He's played all over the Stanford defense. Just feels like a Ravens pick. Again, another guy, I don't know where he's going to play. Just get better, improve your depth on the back end. That's what you do with those day three picks, those fifth round picks. Caillou Kelly, I think, is a really good grab for them.
Let's go now to the Cincinnati Bengals. Their top choice in this draft, they picked very late in round one. Miles Murphy, the defensive end from Clemson, and the Bengals, Ben, had not drafted a defensive lineman in the first round since 2001. So it had been a long time since they addressed it. That was actually one of the big takeaways into having conversations with guys like Joe Goodberry over the years, was like, yeah, you know, Cincinnati, they've always feel like they can wait on defensive linemen. They've had so much success finding guys in the middle rounds. And you look through, I mean, the proof's in the pudding there. They have had a lot of success taking defensive linemen round three, round four, round five, and turning them into solid to really good NFL starters. You guys like Geno Atkins, like there are a bunch of the guys in the pipeline there, but they go and they get Miles Murphy here out of Clemson here in 2023.
Yeah, and I think, you know, any contending team like the Bengals expect to be again in 2023, adding pass rushing threats, adding defensive linemen is going to be a good thing and a safe bet. And I think a Miles Murphy, again, a player that was mocked consistently in the top 10, now sliding to the back end of round one, really good value. Miles Murphy did nothing the past 4 or 5 months for his stock to drop. It just other guys leapfrogged him. So I think he's a really good pick there, late round one, and at a premium position and a spot that the Bengals can certainly need and use, you know, chased around those AFC quarterbacks. So they like what they have in Trey Hendrickson. Sam Hubbard is a really good player on the other side, Fran. But two defensive ends isn't enough. We know Joseph Asai had to play a lot. We know Cam Sample gets out there. Adding a Miles Murphy is a legit second defensive end to Trey Hendricks and those other guys. Adding high-level talent like that to the defensive line, you just know Lou Anarumo's got to be really excited to grab him where they did.
I'm assuming you did not watch the post-draft press conferences like I did for the Bengals. But that was one of the things they hit on a lot was when you look around the AFC, you look at the quarterback landscape, you can never have enough pass rushers or corners. And honestly, it was something that carried them into day two because they continue to add to the defensive side of the football in this draft. Because when you look at what they did on day two, after taking Miles Murphy in round one, they come back, they take the corner from Michigan, DJ Turner, in round two. They take Alabama safety Jordan Battle in round three. On day three, they go with Purdue wide receiver Charlie Jones, highly productive year in his sixth year in college. Illinois running back Chase Brown looks like he's in line to maybe be the number two back there as a rookie. Andre Yoshivas, the speed receiver from Princeton. Brad Robbins, a big-footed punter from Michigan. And then DJ Ivey, the toolsy corner from the University of Miami. So, Ben, when you look at the haul overall for Cincinnati, the biggest surprise from this whole draft class?
Probably them double-dipping at defensive back on day two. Taking DJ Turner in round two and then Jordan Battle in round three for a back end that I thought went into the draft very settled.
They were asked about this from a media standpoint, like especially with the Battle pick. I think the Turner pick didn't take their media core by surprise, but Jordan Battle, they were like, yeah, like why take a safety here?
And not to mention Jordan Battle wasn't getting a lot of day two love from most scouts and evaluators. He was kind of a settled day three pick. So it was a bit of a reach on Battle to a position a lot of people didn't feel like the Bengals needed. Yes. Major turnover with losing Von Bell, Jesse Bates, Eli Apples gone in free agency. But don't forget, they spent some good coin on Nick Scott, bringing him in from the Rams. 2022 first-rounder Dax Hill was pretty much put on ice last year. Yep. Cam Taylor-Britt and Awuzie, they're going to be the corners. They still have Mike Hilton at the nickel. Suddenly, DJ Turner and Jordan Battle really don't have spots heading into the season. But that's always been the Bengals' formula, particularly on defense. They don't need to thrust these young players into the lineup right away. You know, whether it's going back to, you know, Dax Hill last year or a guy like William Jackson before that and players before that, they don't always want to throw those young defensive players right into the fire. Lou Anarumo likes vets back there. He likes guys he could trust. So if you don't see a lot of DJ Turner or Jordan Battle this year, that's okay. This Bengals team takes kind of a long view approach, and we all know this season is a battle of attrition. You're going to need some depth at some point. It's nice to have some high level depth, but biggest surprise, Fran, was probably the double dip there at defensive back.
Ben, I've talked with people that have worked for the Bengals in the past, and they've basically told me, like, we would go into a draft and say, hey, I don't know how this is going to play out, guys, but we're taking a wide receiver in round one. We're taking an offensive tackle in round two. We're taking a corner in round three. We're taking a linebacker in round four. Like, literally, like, this is the shopping list. This is what we're doing, and this is the area of the draft that we're going to address it. We don't know who the players are, but that's what we're doing. This is a different operation now. The way that they are going about it, they're focusing on primary positions early. They're not drafting for like dire need right now. To your point, they're happy drafting a year out, understanding like, yeah, like if this guy sits year one, like that's okay. You know, Chidobe Awuzie, like, yeah, he's blocking DJ Turner right now, but He's going to win a contract year. DJ Turner can step in and be a starter in 2024. Like, having those conversations, same thing with Miles Murphy. Like, I think when you look at a lot of these picks, it's with the future in mind. It's not just about right now. And they always like hammer, like, it's best player available, best player available, best player available. Character, I think, means more to this team than it has in the past. So I think you kind of have to throw some stuff out when you're talking about the Bengals and what they're doing now in the draft. Day three, early impact. Who's the guy that stands out to you?
Well, not a whole lot of guys to choose from here. I was wondering if it would be, maybe Charlie Jones compete with Trent Taylor and Trenton Irwin to, you know, squeeze into that fourth, fifth receiver spot, or Andre Ashavas of being just a different type of presence, maybe a long strider that can win down the field. But I got to go with your pick here, Fran. Chase Brown, which I don't see a whole lot of trouble for him in that backfield and getting some snaps. Might have to beat out Chris Evans a little bit for that third down scat back role, but
they did give a lot of love after that pick to and really like after the draft as well to Travion Williams, and it seemed like that he was a guy that they've got high hopes for.
You know, I love Travion at Texas A&M.
He's been in the league for 4 or 5 years.
I was just gonna say, I almost forgot he's still on their roster. I'm not sure if he went through some injuries, or obviously the play of Joe Mixon and then Samaje Perine didn't warrant another running back getting touches. So he had some pretty good talent in front of him, with Perine now off in free agency. Chase Brown's a fifth round pick. I could see a nice little, kind of competition in that backfield. I like Chris Evans too, out of Michigan. Some really talented players back there behind Joe Mixon, but you know, they're going to want multiple backs back there. You're going to want some diversifying roles coming out of the backfield for Joe Burrow. So I hope Chase Brown can maybe get some snaps, and maybe he has the day three early impact.
Yeah, I think that for all the reasons you said, that he was my pick for that reason. I think that he can come in. There's a pathway to him being the guy behind Joe Mixon, and we'll see what that means for him.
Is Jonah Williams still on this team?
Yeah, he's the right tackle. They're working him in a right tackle, and it looks like...
Well, Lyle Collins is an expensive backup.
I think the plan would be that he's going to be a guard. That offensive line, if everybody that's on the roster stays on the roster, and like that's the deal, it kind of came together nice. It's not a top five offensive line.
I like Jackson Carmen at guard. I like Lyle Collins at guard, but then they have Cordell Volson and Alex Kappa, who are kind of like lighter guards. I think they have a little bit of like an identity crisis with their types of offensive linemen, but there's a lot of talent. I just don't know where they're going to plug and play at the moment.
Well, we talked about some of the big picture stuff with Cincinnati. It's a fun team to go through, and I enjoy listening to their coaches and to Duke Tobin after the draft, just kind of going through with this entire class.
They brought in Cody Ford too, Orlando Brown. I mean, they got some big uglies up there. They got some massive players.
Well, Ben, we've got our final team, and as a team that had, I think, maybe the fewest amount of draft choices in the entire draft this year, that's the Cleveland Browns. Their top pick was not made until the third round, and that's Tennessee wide receiver Cedric Tillman. They've made a lot of picks day two, and they traded at wide receiver. They traded for Elijah Moore this offseason, a former day two pick. Did they go back to that well here, and they take Cedric Tillman from Tennessee? Why do you think he was the choice here for the Browns?
They had to take somebody.
Yeah, right. Had to take somebody. Why not Tillman?
Tillman was an interesting player. I think right in that late day three was where he was kind of going to be projected. A really interesting height, weight, speed player. A guy that can win down the field with really good size and special teams upside. And I think them trying to find some bigger players in that receiver room to pair with the Elijah Moore you had mentioned, with the Amari Cooper, you know, Donovan Peoples-Jones, and just adding a little bit more of a physical presence to that receiver room. I think Cedric Tillman really kind of checks that box for him.
Yeah, I think it made a lot of sense. They spent a high pick last year at that position on the kid from Purdue, whose name is David Bell.
David Bell.
I think to me, like, David Bell versus Cedric Tillman, I think they're a different class of prospect.
They went and got some speed too. You mentioned Elijah Moore trade. Don't forget, they brought in Marquise Goodwin, track background kid, you know, kind of on the backside of his career. Anthony Schwartz, third round pick at Auburn a few years earlier. They have some, Jakeem Grant is on that team. So they have some serious speed. Now we just need to get a little bigger, a little more physical at some spots. And I think that's a Cedric Tillman pick.
All right, well, let's go through the rest of their selections here. So day two, right after the Tillman pick, they take Siaki Ika, the defensive tackle from Baylor. Then you get Dewan Jones, the right tackle from Ohio State there in the fourth round of the draft, followed up by Isaiah McGuire, the defensive end from Missouri, UCLA quarterback Dorian Thompson-Robinson, Northwestern corner Cameron Mitchell, Ohio State center Luke Whipler rounds out their haul here in the NFL draft. So Ben, biggest surprise when you look at the Cleveland Browns in the draft?
Probably the two middle picks there, and Siaki Ika and Dewan Jones, two guys that the seamstress of the Browns are really going to have to work some overtime fitting those 350-pound frames into their jerseys. So I think they're really good players. I just couldn't figure out where in the draft and the NFL coveted them. And I'm not entirely sure, you know, Ika's third round, DeJuan Jones' fourth round, one team took them there. I'm not sure that's the consensus view across the league. So trying to sort these types of players out for future drafts. I know we're kind of reflecting back on the Browns and their picks, but a lot of this is for evaluators moving forward too, and the way the league views these players. And Ika, who is a brick of a nose tackle with not a lot of pass rush upside, and DeJuan Jones, absolutely massive. I really thought DeJuan was going to be more of a second round pick, and I thought Ika was going to be more of a day three pick, and they could both kind of flip. So trying to recalibrate how the league feels about these types of players for my own knowledge is an interesting exercise.
Do you recall who the new defensive coordinator is in Cleveland?
Off the top of my head, no.
It is Jim Schwartz.
Oh, interesting. Okay. I thought he was just like an advisor role. I didn't think that was an official title.
So no, he was in Tennessee as like the, you know, senior defensive assistant or whatever the title was, but got hired this offseason as the DC in Cleveland. And apparently on the call with Siaki Ika, he told him like, you're not a dump truck anymore. You're a Ferrari or something like that. Like basically, hey, look, we're going to ask you to just like pin your ears back and go. For Ika, that's going to be interesting. For a guy that big, it's going to be, that'll be interesting to watch. Day three, any surprise standouts? I mean, you mentioned DeJuan Jones being surprised that he goes there that early. I kind of think Isaiah McGuire, like that's a sneaky name, man, to keep an eye. Like he could be a starter here as a rookie. That wouldn't shock me.
Dude, I loved Isaiah McGuire's tape. I think round four was right where he should have landed. I think he's going to be a backup defensive end impact player, just very much the way I liked Isaiah Thomas at Oklahoma the previous year, who was able to get on the field quite a bit last year. They have some interesting players on the D line. Isaiah McGuire is really exciting. I also like Cam Mitchell. I thought he was a really feisty cornerback out of Northwestern. He's going to go join his former teammate, Greg Newsome. Maybe not have a spot for this season, but I don't see there's any reason why he can't compete to be somebody's backup, whether it's Denzel Ward, whether it's Newsome, whether it's Emerson, and just be a good special teamer. I like Cameron Mitchell. I think he was a good fifth round pick.
Any takeaways here, Ben, when you look at the Cleveland Browns in this draft?
I mean, this draft was a little interesting to evaluate without the first or second round pick. So you kind of have to weigh what they got for those, which is always an interesting exercise. And these types of teams are fun to evaluate that don't have the draft capital to make impacts for next season, and just seeing what they do with their late picks.
One big thing, I mean, this is a team that definitely prioritizes guys from like the higher level of competition. And they've said like, oh, that's not an eliminator. That's true. They made 24 draft choices coming into this year. Every one of their picks this year were Power Five, but the 24 picks before this, 20 of them were from Power Five. So they've drafted four guys in, what is it now, three or four years with Andrew Berry that came from the group of five. Of those four guys, though, Ben, they were either guys that were like super productive, like a Harrison Bryant, who won the Mackey Award as the top tight end in college football that year coming out of FAU, or they were Power Five transfers. Alex Wright, James Hudson, and Jerome Ford, all of those guys coming from Power Five schools before ending up in the group of five. I thought you would enjoy that little nugget.
Well, they signed like five Ohio State players, so I'm not sure if they scouted outside the Ohio Valley this class, but Ohio State's a good place to start.
Yeah,
so
right.
Luke Whippler and DeJuan Jones and those guys, have fun.
Yeah, exactly right. Well, Ben, we went through, I guess you did 28 teams here in the last few weeks. So I know you're happy to put the 2023 to bed. You've probably watched like 125 players so far for 2024.
What? I had 125 watched in April.
You always start way too early for the next year's draft. But look, we're not that far away. Like we're recording this towards the end of the day on May 31st, which means that we're only what, like a few weeks away from me, you, and Dane starting our 2024 previews. So buckle up. I hope you're grinding through some tape on some players. We'll be talking about the next draft here in a few weeks. Thanks for joining us here on the Journey of the Draft podcast.
All 32 teams are always under construction. How are they being built? Let's check out the blueprint.
All right, pleased this week to be joined on The Blueprint by Alex Cazora. You can find his work over at Steelers Depot. Follow him on Twitter for as long as Twitter exists, @Alex_Cazora. Alex, thanks so much for joining us here on the Journey of the Draft podcast.
Thanks, Fran. Glad to be here.
So let's talk through the Steelers selections here in the draft. And they trade up. They trade up ahead of the Jets, and they select Georgia left tackle Broderick Jones from the University of Georgia. Take us through the why. Why was he the pick here? The young, I believe, redshirt sophomore or true junior from the Bulldogs.
Yeah, I think it was a couple reasons. A, the scarcity of tackle. I think after him, there was Anton Harrison. Pittsburgh showed some interest in him. But beyond that, there was a big fall off, I think, in the strength of tackles, particularly left tackles. And so I think for Pittsburgh, that had needs at corner, left tackle were kind of their two spots. this cornerback class was so deep, they knew they could probably wait on that and get somebody. And of course, lo and behold, Joey Porter Jr. sitting there at pick 32, a guy they probably would have taken at 17. So it all kind of worked out well. I mean, it's the first time Pittsburgh has taken an offensive tackle in round one since 1996. It was the one position Kevin Colbert never drafted in his tenure, in part because Pittsburgh was picking usually in the 20s and late teens, and some of the top blue chip left tackle prospects are no longer there. But I think to the player himself, Jones, the athleticism, I think the moldable clay in his game where he can become a really good tackle, just a one-year starter, full-time guy at Georgia, was attractive. Pittsburgh, they want to beef up the trenches. You bring in Andy Weidel as the assistant GM, and what they did in Philadelphia, building up that O-line, that D-line, that carries over to Pittsburgh. And Weidel's a Pittsburgh guy. His first NFL draft was 1998 when he was an intern with the Pittsburgh Steelers, and their first selection was Alan Faneca. And so that kind of sets the tone for those big physical offensive linemen up front. So Pittsburgh's vision this year, Fran, is to play that bully ball, that really strong offensive line, defensive line, control time of possession, run the ball effectively. You need a good tackle to do that, to protect Kenny Pickett as well. And so all those reasons make Broderick Jones the pick at 14.
Well, I've said this to you in the past that you do such a great job of not just chronicling what the Steelers are doing, like from like reported interests and like pro day visits and like those kind of things, but also just kind of getting a sense of who are the types of players that fit the mold of what Pittsburgh has targeted in the past. So I'm going to kind of pepper some of these questions in with you as we go through some of these selections. I thought it was notable listening to Mike Tomlin after the Broderick Jones selection. He was asked about, I believe it was like Broderick Jones, like leadership as a young player. And he said, look, he's a young junior. He's a third year player. I don't really care necessarily about like the off-field stuff because he's going to grow as a human being. We're talking about the ceiling here. And I thought it was interesting kind of juxtapose that against what he said about Kenny Pickett a year ago. And Pickett was a fifth-year senior coming out of the University of Pittsburgh. And they were like, well, what we like most about Kenny was his high floor, like literally going the complete opposite. I didn't know if that was something that kind of struck a chord with you as well. Or do you think that they kind of look at that almost kind of differently? It's like, hey, like if this guy's a senior, like this is what we want to see. If this guy's an underclassman or a third year player, this is what we want to see.
Sure. I think the circumstances are different. What you expect from a third year junior, 1 year starter on a great Georgia team is different than what you expect from a quarterback, a fifth year guy, you know, leading that Pitt Panthers program. And so I think expectations are different, and that's totally fine. I mean, you know, if Jones could become a leader at some point, that's great, but you don't need your left tackle to necessarily be your leader of the team. You need your quarterback to be a leader of the team. And Pittsburgh's offense was the youngest offense in football last year. So you better have some guys that can step up and take on those veteran leadership roles. And Pittsburgh's O-line, they've added some veterans and Isaac Seumalo and Mason Cole and James Daniels. So there are leaders on that offensive line already. You don't need necessarily a rookie to come in and be that kind of guy. It was really about finding who's going to be the best left tackle of our future. And that's why, you know, the leadership matters less in the tape, and the upside from an on-field perspective matters more.
So Mike Tomlin fielding a lot of questions. Obviously, he's been there for forever. But Omar Khan, who also has been there for forever, this was his first draft as general manager. So I'm interested to kind of get your thoughts on some of the big differences between what you saw from Omar Khan versus Kevin Colbert, who had been the GM for a long time before that. But as we go through this, just looking at these day two selections here by the Steelers, three in total. Joey Porter Jr., who was actually the most mocked player to the Steelers in a lot of the sharp mock drafts out of Penn State. He goes to them at number 33 overall. Wisconsin defensive tackle Keanu Benton, and then Georgia tight end Darnell Washington. Your thoughts here on the day two selections for the Pittsburgh Steelers?
A really strong haul overall, names that I did not expect to be there necessarily. Porter, I thought, would be a first round type of guy to get him at 32. Pittsburgh, I mean, Omar Khan said they got 8 or 9 offers to trade out of that pick. As you sit there, that first selection, you got the quarterback still there, Will Levis, Hendon Hooker. Pittsburgh could have easily traded out, but Khan and Tomlin essentially said, we would have traded out of that pick had Porter not been there. And so he's there, the family ties, that's big in Pittsburgh. If you have a dad to play in the NFL, Pittsburgh's going to want to target you because they love the bloodlines there. And of course, Porter being a Steeler, being that long press physical corner, they really want to be able to disrupt the timing of some of these routes, you know, disrupt Jamar Chase off the line. If DeAndre Hopkins gets in the AFC North, they want to disrupt that timing. That's going to allow TJ Watt, Alex Highsmith, Cam Hayward to get after the quarterback even easier. And so those are the type of corners that they're going after. Benton, later in the second round, a Pittsburgh Steelers type, it's so hard to find that defensive lineman that's 6'3", 300 pounds, 33-plus inch arms. You just don't see a lot of those guys. They're getting smaller. They're getting quicker. And so Benton has that size. He's got the pedigree. Wisconsin defense, similar to Pittsburgh. And so there's an easier projection in terms of the system and the style of defense that Benton's coming out of. And then for Washington to be there, pick 93, Pittsburgh trades down. They go from 80 to 93, still get Washington. Apparently some medical concerns there about the knees, but, you know, the best blocker in this class, inline kind of guy. a lot of these tight ends, they struggle blocking because they were big flex stand-up tight ends in college. That's not Washington. He's an inline guy. He takes pride in blocking. Again, Pittsburgh, they want to be physical. They want to be big. They want to run the ball effectively. They run a lot of 12 personnel this year with Washington and Pat Freiermuth. And so I think big physical athletes, that's who these three guys are.
The other big thing, just looking at all four of these players, all four reportedly were top 30 visits from the Pittsburgh Steelers. Mike Tomlin and Omar Khan at the Pro Day, at the Georgia Pro Day. So there for Broderick Jones and Darnell Washington. That has been a recurring theme over the years, right? If you can just kind of turn the light on that for our listeners. If Mike Tomlin goes to a Pro Day, if Omar Khan's at the Pro Day, that's typically a sign of legitimate interest there. Whereas like smokescreen, that's not necessarily a thing there with Pittsburgh.
Yeah, there's no smoke screens. There's no games in Pittsburgh, and good on them because the draft is hard enough. Don't make it tougher on yourself by trying to play these games and trying to hide who you like. And so, yeah, every single first-round pick the Pittsburgh has drafted since 2010 have had either Mike Tomlin or the GM, Kevin Colbert, or Omar Khan at their pro day. And Tomlin and Khan, like the rest of the NFL, to be fair, but they were at that Georgia pro day. Yeah. So very clear correlation there.
All right, let's go to the day three picks here. Just three guys here this year. Nick Herbig, you talk about the football bloodlines. They love the football families. Nick Herbig joining his brother Nate, the former Eagle, there in Pittsburgh. He's out of Wisconsin. Corey Trice, the oversized corner from Purdue. And then Spencer Anderson, the offensive lineman from Maryland. Any general takeaways just from that trio of players there, Alex?
Yeah, some versatility, the bloodlines you mentioned. I think, you know, they're going to start Herbig as an outside guy, as an edge guy like he was at Wisconsin. I have reservations there just given the size profile. I mean, 6'2 is fine, 240. He's kind of a thinner guy, and the lack of length, typically in Pittsburgh, the shorter edge rushers. And now James Harrison and Lamar Woodley, they were stocky guys. They weren't necessarily the longest guys, but they were pretty stocky. Herbig, not really that type of guy, so can he hold up on the edge? A bit of a concern there, but good athlete, should be a core special teamer out of the gate. Trice is a guy that fell, and again, medical concerns there, some ACL issues, ankle issues, but really good value in the seventh round. I thought he might go back to safety. He started his Purdue career at safety, then moved to corner. I don't know if the long speed is quite there. I think maybe he's going to be a best fit as a sub-package type guy, maybe match him on some tight ends. I don't know if he's going to stick at corner, but Pittsburgh will try him there to begin with. And then Spencer Anderson, versatility. He's played all five positions. He's got some size, not ideal length, but really good feet. I thought against Ohio State, some of what he could do in pass protection, mirroring, getting out in space. I thought there was some athleticism there. And so Pittsburgh really focusing on building their offensive line depth because they got real lucky last year, Fran. All five starters played in all 17 games. The only team that can say that. That's not going to happen again in 2023. No. Someone will get hurt. And so you better insulate yourself with depth. Get Nate Herbig. You draft Spencer Anderson. That's what those guys are here for.
So, Alex, like I said, you do a great job of kind of chronicling this over at Steelers Depot. But for our listeners that are not familiar with that, what are some of the big takeaways when you look at the Steelers, their history of the players they target in the draft? Hey, you're putting together a mock draft next year. It comes to the Steelers. What are some things to keep in mind there when drafting for Mike Tomlin and Omar Khan?
Yeah, as we mentioned, in terms of kind of, we call it the Blues Clues over here, the signs of what to look for. The pro day interest, follow where Mike Tomlin, Omar Khan go. That's going to tell you first round guys. Follow positional coaches. That usually tells you more second round guys. That's where Joey Porter, they had a positional coach there. With Nick Herbig, they had positional coach at that Wisconsin pro day. And so those are usually the telltale signs that they like athletes. You know, Kevin Colbert, I think after missing on Jarvis Jones, remember when Jarvis Jones fell to them, Kevin Colbert said, "We're happy he ran 4.9 because he fell to us." And they found out pretty quickly why he fell to them running 4.9. Just not a good enough athlete. And so they kind of course corrected and went with some of the hyper athlete type of guys. So watch for guys that are, you know, good RIS numbers and things like that. And then clean character. They really don't touch guys that have a lot of off-field concerns, guys that don't come with a lot of baggage. That's kind of been their mantra the last 5 or 10 years. So I would just say athleticism, character, follow those pro days. You can create a pretty short list who Pittsburgh is checking out.
Yeah, your work speaks for itself, man. I remember actually it was the morning of day two of the draft. You did like a short list. It was, you know, 5-6 players, something like that, of who the Steelers are likely going to target. Joey Porter Jr., Keanu Benton were two of the names that were on that list. And so it's certainly not a surprise that they ended up in the black and gold. Alex, thanks so much for joining us here on the Journey to the Draft podcast, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you, Fran. I appreciate it.
All right, so great stuff there from Alex. Appreciate his time. Great work over at the Steelers Depot. A very valuable resource if you're following the Pittsburgh Steelers and what they could be doing schematically and then also philosophically when it comes to the NFL draft. Really appreciate you guys sticking with us here as we wrap up now our 2023 recaps for the NFL draft. Like I said at the top of the show, we are not too far away from turning our attention to 2024. And so if you want to make sure you were getting ready for college football season, who the top players are going to be, we're going to start our conference previews here here right in the thick of summer. Myself, Ben Fennell, Dane Brugler, that's the plan. Hoping to stick to it. We'll be back here in the coming weeks. I'm sure we might have a little bit of content here and there until those previews start. But stay tuned right here on the Journey to the Draft podcast.